Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hey everyone, welcome to This Is Steph Sober, a weekly podcast for those in need of some sober support. I'm your host, Steph, and in this episode, I speak with Helen, who is just over 1 month sober. Helen noticed that her drinking was slowly escalating to a level that she was not comfortable with. She found herself making a drink whenever she was bored or lonely. So when she was left alone for 10 days this last month, she made a promise to her son that she would not drink. She is learning that having accountability helps her stay the course. This is a prime example of the type of work you need to do in early sobriety. Identifying why you want to drink in the first place is a huge step in the right direction. Helen, I am so proud of where you are, and I can't wait to see what life has in store for you. This is Helen Sober. All right. Welcome, Helen, to the podcast. I'm so glad that you are here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really exciting to be here.
Good, good. Yeah, I am so excited to have connected with you. You are early in your sobriety. How far along are you? Do you count days? Do you like to talk about that?
Yeah, no, I totally count days. I'm about 33 days today. Yeah. So very early days.
Congratulations. Yeah, but that's no small feat. I remember those first 30 days, like just wanting to get there was just huge. Saying I've done it for a month, you know, it was like each milestone just builds
absolutely,
that momentum.
Yeah. 30 days is the longest I've gone about drinking for a very, very long time. So yeah, it feels like a big achievement for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah,
thank you. No, I think accounting remained quite important for me for a little while. I know in my 40 years, I know in my 50 years and so on and so on. So yeah, keep it going. I'm kind of finding it a good tool.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So do you want to talk a little bit about what led you to where we are today? As far as, you know, what your relationship like was with alcohol? Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, of course. I've been thinking about this, and I kind of think I've been all different types of drinkers, not kind of one type, and it's merged and changed and whatnot over the years. But I think my story is pretty similar to a lot of people. I started drinking quite young, just really sociably with friends. I think when I was younger, we were all binge drinking. We were totally drinking far too much, and we either stopped when we fell over or puked on ourselves, and that's gross in itself. But I wasn't unusual. I was kind of up with my peers. We were just, you know, parties. We had quite a lot of garage parties before we were old enough to go to clubs and things. And it was kind of fine. And looking back on it, my drinking was on the lower end of the scale. So totally binge drinking and doing all of that stuff. But I did have one friend who, looking back on it, was a super heavy drinker and really needed people's support. So I was often the one to put down my drink and go and help her, sober her up and make sure she was safe. So I kind of got the label as camp mother a little bit, which was, it was kind of good for my drinking. I knew how to, I knew when to put down the drink and go and support her. So I don't think I was completely out of control at high school. Go on to university. I worked, again, everyone drinking, university culture in New Zealand. I went to Dunedin, Otago University. Drinking culture is pretty heavy. Kids are drinking most nights a week in their flats and out in the clubs. So I actually got a job in a bar, which was both a positive and a negative. So positive was that I was, working while most people were partying. And we had a really good culture at the bar I worked at. Everyone was pretty, responsible. We all were there for a purpose. But it also led to Sunday staffies. So that was when us hospo kids let our hairs down and, went wild. Again, I don't remember being particularly out of step with my peers, but, university, heavy drinking was definitely around. And that kind of came to an abrupt end for me and my now husband when we got pregnant with our first boy. I wasn't super young, but I was 23. So while all my friends were still, partying hard out, and this is when Facebook just got introduced, which wasn't very good for the old mental health, because I could see all of my friends on the other side of the world going to raves and parties and things. And we were at home looking after babies, turned out to be two boys, one after the other. So we were at home raising babies. And Steph, I can't remember drinking almost at all. And probably in that 5-year period, I think we didn't drink at home. Like, I had the odd night out with my girlfriends, but for 5 years, drinking just wasn't a focus for me. And my husband has never been a heavy drinker. He's the type of person you just have one beer in the sunshine and that's kind of enough. He's a bit tired. it was kind of interesting. When I was thinking back on it, I'm like, I had a really big stint of really not giving a shit about alcohol and not letting it be a big part of my life. Which I think is cool. It kind of gives me a little bit of strength. Like when I need to put down the bottle, I totally can, and I'm blooming well again. So that's a good thing. But I think also kind of being such a young mum and kind of out of the workplace and out of the party scene while everyone else was getting started with their careers and getting, going out and partying. By the time I did get back into the workplace, I was really hungry for it. And I really, I wanted to go out and I wanted to kind of make up the lost time. And I think, I think that's probably one of the darkest periods of my drinking. I think because of that, I went searching for heavy drinkers, and we kind of went searching for people who wanted to drink midweek. And the type of job I got into, it was kind of work hard, play hard culture. And adding to that, probably one of my, I'm not sure if closest friends is the right word, but one of my drinking companions was my boss. So he would often just like, have another drink, stay out for another couple of hours, don't bother coming to work tomorrow, it's no big deal, like a complete enabler.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so, yeah, we just kind of lived like that for a couple of years. But kind of associating with other heavy drinkers, I started to realise that they were drinking for different reasons, and I won't use his name, but I'll include my boss in that, like, broken marriages, really unhappy homes, like it's kind of dark reasons. And I think I don't remember having an epiphany and kind of going, oh shit, this isn't good. But I do remember getting an awareness that this kind of drinking is kind of sad. Like, I really wanted to, I'd rather be out in the clubs and I'd rather be dancing with glow sticks with my girlfriends and stuff, but this kind of drinking was really, it was miserable. So I think I had, again, it was probably a positive and a negative, but a bit of insight, and that's kind of where my drinking started to come home, because I didn't want to do that sad drinking anymore. I thought that was just a bit too depressing and pathetic. So kind of bringing the bottles of wine home, again, it was like super positive at the start. Like, me and my husband would have like an in-house date night. We'd have cheese and crackers, and so we didn't have to get babysitters, and we'll just sit up and have amazing conversations. Like, I do remember some really positive times. But as I mentioned, my husband has one and he's done, and I just want to keep going. I just want to keep going until that bottle's done, and if the bottle's done, I'll have a couple of whiskeys, and all of a sudden I'm really drunk and my husband's gone to bed. So it kind of gone into this another little misery spiral. And again, that didn't happen immediately, but I've been listening to Alan Carr's How to Control Your Drinking, and he talks about the pitcher plant. And man, that metaphor, that analogy is so powerful for me. I see over probably the last 5 to 7 years this progression from nice bottles of wine with my husband through to sitting on the couch, never having enough, always wanting that next drink. So I think it was a slow progression, but I was definitely going down that pitcher plant in a way that I'm really unhappy with, really didn't want to continue doing. And again, I kind of popped back into a story I've heard quite a lot on podcasts. COVID hit and it gave me an excuse to drink more and more. At the time, I was in a job I was pretty unhappy with. I had not much to do. Some people got frantic in COVID. I got kind of put to the side. And then we made, which I believe is an awesome decision, but we decided to move towns. So we've moved into a smaller town where my husband grew up. So he knows lots of people and he's kind of jumped back into his social scene. He plays basketball and he's doing all this stuff. I'm lonely. I know a couple of people, but I don't have any really good girlfriends. So that's, yeah, I think we've probably only been here about 7, 8 months now, but the first 6 months I was drinking. I was just on the couch, not feeling miserable, just on the couch because I had nothing to do and drinking. And so that a bottle of wine one night a week turned into 3 nights a week. Those whiskeys just sneaking back in. I had a pretty big job. I was a contractor, program manager. Contractor, I had to travel, I had to get on flights the next day and go and run workshops, and I was hungover. And you know, I performed well, you know, I did it, I got through it, but man, it was tough. And I kept waking up on the morning having to catch these flights. I'm like, for the love of God, Helen, what are you doing? You've got this like massive presentation to make, like pull yourself together, woman. And I just started thinking, like, you know, how capable, how amazing can I be if I can ditch the booze? Like, I do have a big job. I'm a great mum. My boys are amazing. You know, my marriage is in an excellent place. Like, there's no reason for me to be behaving like this. Sorry, it was such a long story, but it's gone in waves and flows and kind of all these really strange places over the last 25 years. But I just think the last 6 months were just like, yeah, no, not cool. Not cool anymore. I just don't want to sit on the couch drinking for the rest of my life. I think it's so unhealthy.
Yeah. So you say it's kind of been a realization that started over the last 6 months as far as getting yourself to the point where you're like, done.
Yeah.
What did the last 6 months look like? Tell me a little bit about that.
Cool. I think I was pretty aware I was drinking too much in COVID, but kind of so was everybody else. So, kind of totally let myself off the hook. I think it just came in the last 6 months. My butt was on that couch so much, and I'm a really active person, and I'm an extrovert. Like, I'm a quiet person, but I like to be around other people. And just the thought that, like, man, I monitor my eating, like calorie intake and stuff, and so you have to capture all of your drinks. And I look back on my weekly eating chart, I had 5 nights drinking. And it may have only been 2 or 3 drinks a night, but that's a lot of wasted calories, a lot of wasted time, and a lot of hangovers to deal with. Like, I'm getting older, you know, even 1 or 2 glasses of wine, I feel pretty dusty in the morning. You know, I'm so glad I've never experienced a blackout. I've never become aggressive. I don't even think I'm that annoying when I'm drunk. My husband, he calls me Frank the Tank for some reason, but it's more about because you can't really tell. Like, I've had quite a lot of drinks, but I'm never the messy, you know, kind of crazy person. So it's so easy for me to do quiet drinking at home. Like, even now, hubby and my kids are just like, oh, you know, I'm telling them, I'm 30 days sober, this is amazing. They're just like, oh, did you drink a lot? Yeah, so this is 100% for me and how I felt about my drinking and where it was going. So no massive rock bottom. It was just kind of this realization, just like, oh, girl, I've got too much going for me, and this is not where I want to go. I think I've got a lot more in me, and I'm, you know, capable. I'm a capable person. Why am I turning to alcohol?
Yeah. So what's your exact sober date? You're 33 days in.
My sober date is the 29th of December. It was the day before my son turned 16.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. It's amazing that your kids, though, don't notice the contrast between when mom was drinking and mom wasn't. So that's just I haven't ever really spoke to anyone who could say that, you know, that they, I mean, that takes a lot of self-control. What do you think, if you were to guess, or maybe you know, were like kind of the main reasons you were drinking? Like, what emotions were behind the reasons that you sat on the couch in the evenings and got on with it?
That's such a good question. I mean, the last 6 months, though, is 100% loneliness, just not really having things to do and people to see. But before that, it was, I told myself it was the reward at the end of a hard work day. My kids are awesome. I don't kind of get that mummy stress, but I have called it mummy's medicine in the past. I really regret that. I think buying into that mummy wine culture is such BS. Yeah, I think, I mean, knowing me, Steph, I probably think up an excuse, a different excuse every night. I've had a hard day, I've had a great day, I've been for a run. I want to sleep well, and now I know that's super counterintuitive, but yeah, any excuse kind of went for me. And if I had an open bottle, and if I could moderate to the fact that I'd only have half of it, had to go the next night, having a bottle in the house that was open was just unacceptable for me.
So your husband, you said he's always been able to take it or leave it type of attitude around alcohol. When you told him that you were going to quit drinking, what was that conversation like? Was he surprised? Was he like, tell me about that.
Yeah, he wasn't surprised because I've been talking about it on and like I've been sober curious for a little while. So I've been asking him like, did I drink too much? That kind of question. So I don't think he was surprised. Listen, he's just one of those husbands who, if you ask him if your butt looks fat in jeans, he's like, no, you look amazing kind of thing. So I kind of got the same response with alcohol, like, I don't think your drinking is that bad, I think you're fine. My 40th birthday is coming up. He's like, what are you going to do at your 40th? Like, and he was attempting to be supportive as he always is, but it was kind of like, I don't think you're hearing me, honey. Like, I'm giving up alcohol. And kind of had to explain to him. And this actually was a big realization. Through talking to him, I realized that I probably was hiding my alcohol. So when I said to him, I was drinking like, 3 to 4+ a night, depending on the night and the reason. And he was just like, are you? Yeah. Like, well, okay. And we got out of it. We had some friends here the other night, and I was sober. I had some alcohol-free wine. They were guzzling the beers and the wines. And one of our friends saw our whiskey and said, like, Johannes, do you want a whiskey? And when he pulled out the whiskey bottle, which was in a Jack Daniels box, it was gone. There was a dribble left in it. And my husband Johan, he was just like, hello, what's this? And I said to myself in my head, like, I never really thought of myself hiding alcohol, because he would see me, I'd have it out on the couch kind of, but putting it back in the box, I think, was a deliberate decision, really, maybe unconsciously, but I was hiding alcohol. So pulling out that empty JD bottle was just like,
There's
Yeah,
some
so I think,
evidence, right?
yeah, totally. So I think he's kind of over the last year, 30 days himself, just kind of going, maybe she was starting to lose control over this. And yeah, but no, he's been super supportive.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. It's funny because I live about 5 hours away from family. And my drinking probably like yours. Got really bad around COVID, but it's always like looking back now, it's always been not good. Like I've always overdone it. And my mom struggled with the fact that I quit drinking because I had a problem. I mean, she just was like, what do you mean you have a problem? But she wasn't around it. You know, when she'd come in town for a weekend, she thought that's just why I drank so much because we were hanging out and having fun. But I don't sometimes. I'm someone who likes to, this is what's crazy. I like to be in control, yet I would drink and ride that line. It was almost like a weird challenge, right? Like, let's see how much I can drink, but then I'm also going to try to stay in control. And it's like, why put yourself through that? But that's kind of how, so I can totally relate to people kind of being surprised when you're like, I'm done. And they're like, oh. Well, I didn't know it was a problem. But that's the thing. Like, if it's a problem for you, it's a problem. Just because you might not look like the typical alcoholic or, you know, you're showing signs of, you know, physical problems from drinking, it's still like, if it's a problem for you, it's a problem. And that's like my biggest thing that I tell people all the time. Like, I had so many people in my life who I confided in at times that I was worried about my drinking. Like, I feel like maybe I'm drinking too much. And they would say to me, oh my gosh, no, you're fine. Just take a week off. And I just think, if they would have never said that, if they would have actually just listened and said, you know what, if you think this is a problem, I'll support what you want to do. But they didn't. And so then it just, you know, I automatically thought, okay, maybe I'm just exaggerating. You know, maybe I'm being dramatic. Yeah. I can handle this. So I think it's important for people to understand when someone comes to you and they feel like their drinking is affecting them, instead of forcing your opinion on what you think is a drinking problem, it's best to just listen and ask them what you can do to be there for them and support them.
Yeah. So, 100%. And I think podcasts like yours and others have been such a lifesaver, because I started, it's so curious, just wanting to listen. And to be fair, a lot of them are, you know, people who have been struggling with blackout drinking and really heavy binge drinking. But every now and again, you just get the person who's just like, yeah, it just wasn't my vibe. I really, you know, for whatever reason, just didn't feel like myself anymore when I was drinking. And those are the types of stories I've been really trying to wheedle out. And, kind of the purpose of you interviewing an early sobriety person, I was also, you know, listening to people who've been sober for 5 years plus, and amazing, like, women, superheroes to me. But I just couldn't relate. I just really needed to hear a bit of, kind of maybe all drinking to the person that's happening to is extreme, but kind of those less extreme versions. You know, I was highly functioning, but it was starting to just creep into this really, not dangerous physically, but dangerous emotionally and mentally space for me. And I think there's a lot of people. I have shared with a couple of friends that I'm, 30 days and feeling great. And, you know, 4 out of 5 have gone like, amazing. I think I could probably take a break from alcohol too. I think, a lot of us are sitting down and having a couple more wines on a Tuesday evening than we ever thought we would, a couple of years ago. So, who knows?
Yeah. And I think, once again, the pandemic had a lot to do with that. It just escalated. It made it normal. And now we're trying to rebound from that and be like, wait a minute, that's not normal. And we're all trying to get back to regular life. And now we all have this like baggage of hangovers and, kind of this addiction to alcohol, because now we're using it for more than just having fun, but to drown out boredom and emotions and all these other things that we were going through. I mean, we all went through a hard time. It affected all of us in some way. And it was a lot. And I think it was the easiest medicine at the time for all of us, especially globally, like everyone has access to alcohol. And it was just not a good time.
Yeah. We had our alcohol stores around here in New Zealand dropping booze off to people's homes. It was just, I'm not sure if it's the same where you are, but our friend was talking about that. And he could get a bottle of whiskey, a bottle of rum every day if he wanted, drink himself into oblivion, and no one was checking, with their kids in their house, how obliterated are people getting in there? It seems madness now. And I think also, hearing all of these stories, that big fallout, as you say, I'm not the only person who saw a distinct change in my drinking over COVID. I'd be so fascinated to know if this is more widespread than people realize, because a lot of people were scared. When we were sent home from work in COVID, it was not me, but there was tears. People were just like, what does this mean? And being in New Zealand, we were the last ones, literally the last country, I think, to get it. So we'd seen the bodies on the streets in New York. We didn't know what. It was both the benefit of foresight, but also a lot of fear came with that. So people were drinking because they were scared. They were really scared.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit, because 30 days. I want to know, let's see, What do we want to talk about first? The great benefits that you're noticing, or yes. Do you want to talk a little bit about your struggles? I'll let you pick what order you want to talk about these things in, but I'm dying to hear what's come about in these 30 days for you.
Yeah. We'll go positive first.
Okay.
I don't think I've experienced this pink cloud thing. But I have definitely seen some physical changes. So I've dropped a little bit of weight. And I know that's not normal for everybody. I'm actually training the Oxfam Trail Walker. It's a big walking event in March. So I'm walking. And I think I actually suffer from melasma. It's a hyperpigmentation thing that happens on your skin. I've seen that decrease significantly, which is super interesting. I was googling it last night. I'm wearing makeup now, but it's quite pronounced on my cheeks. I think alcohol was contributing to that, and I was getting laser treatments and all kinds of things. So it does seem to be something about where the pigmentation is. I'm going to completely screw this up. I'm not a doctor, but it was something to do with the liver processing alcohol. It's the same place where your kind of pigmentation is from. So yeah, that's a huge benefit for me, because that's been, you know, I get really self-conscious about that. And I've heard this is both a blessing and a problem, but I have all this time, and it's summertime in New Zealand here, so I'm out walking the dog in the evenings, I'm reading books again, I'm doing all these things that I've just kind of had shoved to the side because they give me that glass of wine down my face. So that's all been super beneficial. But I think my most exciting day was when we did have our friends had come up from where we used to live, they're passing through to go to a concert, and they were heavily drinking. And I didn't. I got through the night on alcohol-free wine, and by about 10 p.m. I just wanted a cup of coffee, so I did that. But I still totally myself and had a really great time with them. So I pretty much punched the air before bed. I'm like, I can do this. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty big milestone for me. That was just before my 30 days. But yeah, I felt amazing. So those are all the positives I can think of. Oh, and my clarity, my head fuzz has gone in my vocabulary. Like, I was really starting to worry, was it menopause? Was something happening? Because I'd like point at the phone and kind of, you know, can you pass me my, you know.
Okay, yeah.
my vocabulary was just going down the toilet. And it's coming back. I swear to God, it's coming back. I feel so much more articulate and more confident when I'm speaking to people. I'm not going to struggle for my words. And I really do believe that's the alcohol brain fog leaving my body.
I do too. Absolutely. I feel the same way. There was a time where, yeah, and I would black out. So that didn't help either. So I really know that there was some damage going there. Like, if you're blacking out, you're really taking it too far. And it's like such a huge thing to remember everything the next day. Like, that's the scariest thing when you wake up and you're like, how did I get to bed? Where is everyone? Did my daughter get to bed? Like, it's the worst. And then, yeah, like not being able to form sentences correctly, even when I was sober, because it was just so burned out, you know, like you said, I'd go to, yeah, I couldn't name something. I know exactly what I'm looking at, but the connection was just lost. So I know.
Yeah. And my boys just thought mum was being, you know, tired or dumb. Yeah, I think it was funny. I'm just like, no, you have no idea. This is so frustrating. I should be able to form my words.
Yeah. Well, those are great, especially the condition, the pigmentation condition getting better. That's incredible.
Yeah. I'm so pleased. It would save me thousands of dollars.
Oh, I'm sure.
If it actually solves it. So, you know, that's having something that physical changing. That's a benefit I just really didn't foresee.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't want to get people's hopes up if it's not the same for them. It could, you know,
right,
be unrelated, but I have really noticed that.
But it's good to know, right, that there's a possibility if they're, you know, they could take a look at their relationship with alcohol. It doesn't hurt. They could take 30 days off. It's always going to be there if they want to go back, right?
That's right. Yeah, good point.
It'll be waiting for you. Don't worry. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's hear about the struggles.
The struggles, I kind of mistimed. I mistimed this. Although I got out of Christmas and we were drinking very moderately. I was very proud of myself over Christmas, but there was kind of that obsession. Like if I had two, I could put down the drink, but I was thinking about that drink for the rest of the night. So that pissed me off. Anyway, but we got through New Year's Eve, no problem. We just went to a neighbor's house party and I had water. I hadn't met them before, so I wanted to be together. I didn't want to be drunk or meeting new people. And we climbed a mountain, got a mountain here the next day. So that was fine. Very quickly in January, my whole family, so my two teenage boys and my husband, left. He had work back. He works back in the city. They went up for 10 days. 10 days for me is a devastatingly long time.
That's a really long time.
Really long time. And I've got a beautiful dog, as I can see your one.
Yeah, he needs attention constantly.
So does my girl. We were walking like three times a day. I was trying to jump on this, probably why I lost the weight. I was jumping on the treadmill. I was going to work. I was trying to busy myself. I did paint by numbers and diamond art and read books. But it wasn't enough. I was so... I mean, talk about it. My reasons were loneliness and boredom. 10 days on your own when you're newly sober was tough. Wow. In the same breath, it drew me to Sober Instagram, and I joined Sober Kiwis on Facebook. I just kind of reached out to the community, who was, you know, so supportive. I mean, they talk a lot about the sober community being amazing, but they really have been. And podcasts. Oh my God, I listened to 3 or 4 podcasts. Just completely consume the sober world. It was tough, and you know, by the time they got back, I was really playing the fire around moderating again. I was just like, you know, I've done 10 days, you know, that's fine. I've really given moderation a go, you know. I'm sure you know, it was just this little nasty moderation devil on my shoulder, just like, you know, I don't think you really gave that a go, you know, Helen, you know, maybe you should just not drink in the weekdays. That was your main problem. You were feeling dusty getting up for work. Maybe just drink in the weekends and things. But again, listening to so many podcasts, so many helpful podcasts of people who are just like, moderation just doesn't work. And I think back to Christmas, even when I was moderating and drinking well, I was drinking with my parents, you know, 1 or 2 drinks a night, nothing over the top, but that obsession, that complete preoccupation with alcohol, that's my devil on my shoulder. It may not mean I reach for the alcohol, but it consumes me. I'm sick of that that preoccupation with it. It's just it's boring. It's so boring. Definitely that moderation and trying to beat the boredom have been super big challenges for me. And I thought it would go away when the boys all came home. It didn't necessarily. Because you get all this time back in your day, so I'm still trying to fit in like the new routines and the new me. Like I don't really want to go running on the treadmill every time I feel bored. You know, I've still got legs and muscles and I need to look after things. So I'm just trying to find things that I like to do that aren't too naff. I said to one of my girlfriends, I might take up pottery, and which is I would love to take up pottery. She laughed at me. She thought I'd been a bit of a grandma, but. I might just have to embrace the grandma. Like, I think there's some really cool hobbies out there that I haven't explored yet and could be super fulfilling for me. So,
well, and I think something like pottery is great because, you can, it makes you focus on an end goal. It makes, like, when you, for me, if I create something, right, like there's something to show for my work at the end. I mean, that's the reward in itself. And I think when we're chasing alcohol, we're chasing a reward as well. Like the end goal is to be numb. And so things that kind of give you a dopamine rush, but a healthy one, a more sustained one, one that's going to last longer than the one we get from alcohol. So things like a hobby like pottery would be great. You know, I found for me personally, I've always wanted to strength train, but I never had the courage to do it or the confidence to do it, mostly because of alcohol. Like, who can strength train when they're hungover all the time? And so that was the first thing I did when I decided to get sober, is like, I'm going to focus on that. And that gives me that dopamine that I used to chase with alcohol. Because yeah, it can get really boring because you end up with a lot of time on your hands. You don't even realize how much time was spent drinking, thinking about drinking, and recovering from drinking. Like, it's the majority of your day. And I remember that realization early in sobriety where I was driving down the road and I just thought, oh, I need to get, like, there was always a rush when I was a drinker. I need to get home by this time so I can settle in with my drink. And I kind of, my mind started going there. And I was like, no, but we don't do that. So now what am I going to do? I have all this time, you know? I remember that realization happening. And it's just, it's such a free feeling to know that you just gained all this time for yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, because I'm early days, I'm not trying to try and smash too much into my life. But I've been thinking about learning Te Reo Māori, which is New Zealand's language, or, you know, maybe picking up the guitar, or I love to sing and just trying to get back, you know, like think about Helen before she drank is probably, you know, I was a huge sports person and really creative. And I was just, yeah, I want to find her again. I think she was pretty cool.
You will find her again. Yeah. That was exactly the way you just said. That's exactly what happened for me.
Yeah.
I started drinking at 14 and completely lost who I was. And when I quit drinking, like, she came back. Yeah. All those things that she loved to do, I have found a way to do them as an adult, you know, like doing the podcast and things like that are all things that she would have done.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing. And yeah, you're 30 days in, you are on the right path. You got through 10 days alone.
Completely alone.
Completely alone. I mean, just the momentum and strength that had to have come from that, just because that's what it is. Every time you push yourself through a hard situation that you don't think you're going to be able to get through without drinking, it just, there's like scales, right? And it just like adds to that side of the scale for sobriety. It just adds to that. So yeah, I mean, it's not easy, but it's rewarding. It feels good.
I have noticed though that I'm being very coy on telling people. So those 10 days I had told my family, particularly my youngest, who's 13, I was like, mommy's not going to drink while you're gone. And he was just like, so he doesn't really give a shit. But because I had told him, I had someone I wanted to be accountable to, and I wanted to feel the sense of pride when he came home. Like, no, didn't even think of it. Complete bold lie, but I just have noticed, you know, my Instagram that I've set up is just for, like, it's private. I'm not ready for people that I know to hear this yet. And I'd be interested. I mean, when did you start to tell people, and did that kind of help?
So I got sober the day after Christmas. I didn't really see a lot of people. Everybody was busy with their own families doing their own thing. But when January hit and we all started hanging out again, because we had a group of friends and we all drank together, I just told everybody I was doing dry January because I wasn't ready. I knew it was going to be more than that, but I wasn't ready. Like you said, I just wasn't. I think what it was for me was I was worried that if I told them it was going to be more and it ended up not being more, I don't like to fail. I'm very competitive.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like, if I don't tell them and this does, you know, and I can't do it, because I didn't know if I could do it. But then as I got more confident, so going into February, so it'd be about where you are now, I just decided, I'm like, I just started telling people, the people closest to me that knew me well, I think I'm going to try to do this for good. Like, I feel good. I feel like I've tried quitting before doing dry Januaries and I always went back to it, but I knew, and I also had a kind of mental health wise, my anxiety was really, really bad. And I did the research and I figured out that the alcohol was not helping, which is what I thought I was doing by drinking. And I needed to see that through. I needed to give it enough time to run its course and see if it would help my anxiety. And about day 60, I was no more anxiety attacks, and talk about freeing. Cause there were things I wouldn't do. There were places I couldn't go. And if I did, it was just awful. So yeah, I think you just kind of got to go with like the flow, you know what I mean? Yeah, like when you're ready, yeah. Cause it's your sobriety. This is your thing. It's very important. You got to put it first before anything else. And I've told people that as well. Like they'll invite me to go do something and I know that I don't want to be around. I know that it's going to be a big drunk fest. And I have a really hard time being around people who are extremely drunk anymore. I worry about their safety. I worry about them and I just don't want to be around it. And I will just tell them my sobriety comes first. I love you. I would love to hang out. But in that situation, it's not in alignment. And you know, are there people in my life that have a problem with that? I'm sure. I mean, they haven't said anything, but the absence of them says enough, you know?
That's good. Yeah. I was kind of wondering whether I hadn't told people because I'm scared of that accountability and it's kind of an early days hang up. But I think like you say, it needs to happen in my own time. It's kind of part of my own strength. And, I think with my 40th birthday, because I have invited quite a few people from my old town, like lots of friends are coming. I'm so excited to see them. But they'll be drinking. And I'm actually a bit concerned they're going to bring me wine as a gift.
When's your birthday?
it's March, early March.
My birthday was in April. Well, it's in April. I was still in a phase of I can still hang out with everyone and not drink. Don't anybody change what they're doing for me. I'm fine. And so we went to dinner and there was a lot of drinking and it actually was really hard for me. I felt really alone because I'm like, this was my birthday and I'm celebrating with people. They're drinking to celebrate me and I'm not drinking. Like, I don't even want to be here. Like, this isn't fun. Like, I should have picked something else, but the time I was still trying to keep everyone else happy around me, which is like all part of my story and my unraveling and my sobriety. And like, there's all these things as you get further along that happen and it's all about confidence. You start to just get your confidence and that's when you'll know. You will know when you're ready to tell certain people because you'll feel confident enough in your sobriety and in yourself to tell them.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a little time before March.
I do. And I'm kind of having this lovely time discovering all this alcohol-free drinks, you know, that we've only got a really small supermarket down the road, but they've got a whole wall dedicated to alcohol-free wine. I don't really love it, but they also have these, like they call them dark and stormy and alcohol-free gin and tonics. Like there's so many options. So even if I'm not ready to tell people, I can still have a glass and feel and look like I'm participating. I don't have to give up my sobriety for an event like that. And I think maybe it's the 30 days, but just these small milestones I think I'm getting more and more confident that that's okay. I think I'm pretty sure I can get through a night like that. And I'll tell my husband. He'll have to be like my bodyguard between me and, I don't know. I'll be stronger than that by then, but yeah, I'll be accountable to him and we'll make sure it's fine. Yeah. I'm feeling less and less stressed about it as every day goes on.
Yeah, you will. That's a lot of time. I mean, think about how good you feel now. I mean, when people say this, they're not kidding. It gets better and better and better and better. And I can tell you that being a year in, like your life is about to get so good. Like you're going to do things like you never imagined you could. You're going to have the confidence to do it. You're going to have the head on straight to accomplish things. It's so life-changing. It really is. I'm so excited to like watch your sobriety unfold and all the things that you discover and do. Like, it's going to be so cool.
Oh, yeah, totally. Me too. And I think, I will be so excited my 1 year anniversary. And I just, this is good things. This is really good things. And as I say, like if I can just kind of discover the old me, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to want to go back to that couch dwelling piss head. I was finding myself turning into, she was no good.
Right.
She was boring. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't you?
No.
The real you's coming out.
For sure.
Well, this has been awesome. Do you have anything else that you want to add?
No, I don't think so. This has been really fun. Thank you. I think yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, Steph. I think your
Oh, thank
podcast and
you.
other podcasts I've been listening to is so inspiring. I really enjoy it, and it's such a lifesaver. I mean, I'm not sure if other people seem 10 days completely isolated at the start of their sobriety, but yours and others were ones I just were my go-to. I just needed to hear other people doing this and being successful in it. So thank you.
Well, that means a lot because that's exactly why I do it. I got on sober Instagram, which then led to being exposed to the world of sober podcasts, and I did the same. I listened to podcasts anytime I just felt like no one around me understood what I was going through. And when I finally was confident enough in myself and I was like, I have to give back to this community somehow, they got me through one of the hardest things I've ever gone through in my life. So that's why I do it. And, I'm always like, if I can just help one person get through, and just for you to give me that feedback that, my podcast was part of those really hard 10 days for you, like, thank you for letting me know that, because it makes me feel so
100%.
good.
Gosh, yeah, no, I'm pleased, and thank you so much. I got a lot out of today. I got a bit of advice and support,
Good.
so thank you.
Good. Well, I'm here for you anytime. You know where to find me.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, you enjoy your Tuesday. I'm going to finish up my Monday.
Yeah. All good. Hey, thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk
Okay.
soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today. Remember, I am just a woman on a mission to normalize sobriety and living a sober lifestyle. I am not a licensed therapist or a doctor. Please, if alcohol is causing serious physical or mental health issues, seek professional help. If you enjoyed the podcast, be sure to hit follow so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, leaving a 5-star review will help this podcast reach more people like you in the sober community. It's an easy way to spread the word in normalizing a sober lifestyle. You should never feel alone in sobriety, so feel free to reach out to me via email or through my Instagram account at This Is Steph Sober. Links to both are listed in the show notes.